Wax turns it. He's going for the whole ball of Wax, and he's got Cecil Short. Short catches it. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Oh, my goodness. What a catch by Cecil Short.
Welcome to the Mike Mularkey Show on the Jacksonville Jaguars Radio Network. Join Jaguars head coach Mike Mularkey and the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton, for the latest news and information on your Jacksonville Jaguars.
Straight from the head coach, right from the head coach.
The Mike Mularkey Show is brought to you by Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, Wells Fargo, American Express, Ticket Exchange, and by Everbank. Now, to get things started, here's Brian Sexton.
Good evening and welcome to the Mike Mularkey Show. The regular season is upon us. Jaguars yesterday, Minneapolis, I think you know how it ends. 26-23 in overtime, and we'll talk about that with you a couple of different ways. Since we've come to the regular season, we'll take some phone calls this evening. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. As always, we really appreciate the tweets. That is one of the easiest ways to communicate with the head coach, at Jags Voice. It's always the most awkward question I ask, and that is, how are you on a Monday after a loss, coach? Because no NFL coach is going to say anything but...
No, okay. Well, we're obviously disappointed, but we got to move on. We have a big game this week coming up, and we gave them some time to get over this period, and we just got to make sure that this game yesterday doesn't affect next week's game, and that was addressed today, and I feel good about our team and how they responded today.
In other words, don't let the Vikings beat you twice.
Basically, yeah. Those are the kind of games that can go on for a while. We're going to address it right now. We got 24-hour period is what we told them by 4 o'clock today. That's over with. It's like bad plays in games. You got to move on. You can't. There's nothing we can do about that. What the situation that took place yesterday. The only thing we have control over is this next football game, and we got to get busy getting ready for the Texans.
You've been around this league more than 30 years. Tell me. I mean, do the highs and lows of it ever become normal to you, or are you often still surprised at just how quickly it can turn?
The emotional highs and lows of this game are, and I've been in the business world when I got done playing for a little bit, there's nothing like I did that could ever match the adrenaline flows and the bad feelings that you can have in just a moment's time. So, you know, that's what's so great about this game. I think that's why it's as popular as it is. It's just, I've always said, so I compare it to a whitewater rafting. It's never the same. They're never the same.
That's
ride.
That's a great analogy. You know, Coach, a lot of times coaches have talked about the fact that when you lose, it doesn't necessarily validate all of the things that you've worked on all week. People don't see it. They don't feel it. Yet you talked in the post game with Jeff yesterday, and coming out of that game and even into today at your news conference, about the good things that you saw and where your team progressed. Can your team see that? Or is that still something you've got to fight to get them to see?
I think they see it. They feel it when it's happening. There's been a lot of good things that have happened even in the preseason games when our starters have been in there. There's proof on tape now that they can we have the capability of doing some good things in all three phases. And there's some things they've also seen on tape. If we do it this way, it's not good for the outcome of the game. So, but we have some. We have some positives, but I told the team today I thought we could play better. I was the good, you know, that's the bad news. The good news is, you know, we almost won the game by not playing as well as we're capable of playing, and that's a sign of a team that has some good things ahead of them, I believe. But we could play better in all three phases.
Philosophically, do you come in on Monday with the idea that you've got to make the corrections and focus on those things that didn't go right, or how much time do you spend on those things that did? Is it just a balance?
I mean, everything is addressed. Every player on every play is addressed. Good, the bad, what we need to fix, what we need to get better at, and then the really good things that they did. And that's there's nothing greater to teach off of than game tape because of the speed and the different things that can happen that you cannot improvise or you can't. Really, in practice, show that kind of speed.
The dramatic finish was made possible by a decision that you made at the two-minute warning to punt on 4th and 10 from the 30-yard line. Now, when you went to the two-minute warning, it looked like Blaine was still standing out there running out the clock. Did you ever consider going for it, or was the decision always going to be to punt because it played out perfectly?
Well, we talked through our plays that were possible and just thought, you know, look, we knew how much time we could burn. They could burn off with two timeouts left, that we had two timeouts left, and we just thought, let's run it down to the 2 minutes, save those two timeouts. We know they're going to attempt to run the ball. I felt very good about our defense holding them, and they did a great job. And, you know, left us with no timeouts, but I feel very confident in our two-minute drill in Blaine, and the rest of the group does too. They moved the ball very well against a defense that knew they were going to throw the ball, knew the scenario with no timeouts. So they pinned their ears back and came after us. And our line, who was all, you know, we had some moving parts with our offensive line. I thought those guys did an outstanding job. Some of them playing with some injuries, which is, again, against a defensive front that's very difficult to block. I thought they did a really nice job to get that score.
Since you bring up the injuries, have you ever seen a team lose three offensive linemen in the first half of the first game of a season, let alone any game?
I can't think of a game that I've been a part of, and I've been 500 and some games, three linemen, and really in the first half of a game, let alone the first game, but the first half, to get those kind of injuries.
Can you prepare for those scenarios? I mean, was it, okay, this is what happens, or are you scrambling at some point?
Well, we were scrambling. We were definitely scrambling. You know, we went into the game with seven linemen because the odds of losing two are, you know, not very good. So we thought, you know, most teams go into games with seven linemen. And, you know, when we had three guys hurt, we had Zach Potter, our tight end, over there on the sideline, teaching him the tackle position and all the rules for the tackle and some of the intricacies of that, just in case if somebody else went down, Zach was going to have to go in there as a tackle.
Right. And so give us a quick snapshot. Mike Brewster played quite a bit yesterday.
Mike Brewster played a lot. And thank gosh he's had the number of starts that he had at Ohio State, because he's a center guard. And I put it in that order because he's played center most of his career. But to go in there and play guard against that front and play as many snaps, I was very proud of the way he played. He played with a high effort.
And Guy Wimper had to go in and play for Cam Bradfield.
Right, early. Guy thrown right into the mix early. And against, another good defensive end that we held up. Blaine took some hits, but that was for a number of reasons. And I was very proud of Blaine. You know, he took some hits and he still stood in the pocket and made some very good throws.
It's early in the week. Do you have any idea what you can count on this week from your offensive line, or is that something that's still to be determined?
Yeah, we still have today get them some rest tomorrow. The players have off. They'll come in here for treatment, basically spend the entire day and they're getting treatment, and we'll make some decisions on Wednesday, see where we're at. But, yeah, we're in a little tough spot.
Right. Well, that's the National Football League, isn't it?
Unfortunately, that's the way it is. You just wish it wasn't on the first week of the season.
Absolutely,
yes.
When you have some momentum coming out of the preseason like we did. All right, folks, you can join Jeff Loggeman tomorrow night for Jaguars All Access. That's tomorrow night because of the doubleheader on Monday Night Football tonight. Eugene Monroe joins Jeff on Jaguars All Access on CBS 47 starting at 7. When we come back, Coach, let's talk a little bit about Eugene Monroe and the job that he did on
I'd like to do that.
Yeah.
Jared Allen.
On Jared Allen, that tremendous defensive end. More to come on the Mike Mularkey Show here on the Jaguars Radio Network. Well, you need a truck that works for you even when you're not working. The 2012 Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup truck, and it fits your lifestyle. See your Southern Chevy dealer today, a proud sponsor of the Jaguars. Regular season, we open up the phone lines, 355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. And as always, Twitter, @ Jags Voice. I've got one, Coach, from Steve, and he wants to know your thoughts on the officials with respect to player safety yesterday. And he references my partner, Jeff Loggeman, who was very vocal about the first hit on Blaine Gabbert. The play was whistled dead. The flag was on the ground. And Allen came across the line of scrimmage, as most people know, buried Blaine. And that, I think, Loggeman thought, with the regular officials, is a 15-yard mark off.
Actually, it wasn't blown dead. That was the problem.
Okay,
it was not blown dead. It was just blown as an offsides. It was not, you know, when they're that far across, they should blow the whistle and the whole thing should stop.
Right.
It did not. The ball was, I mean, it just, and he came off a short edge off of Eugene with, to me, it was something they got on it late. And
right.
Unfortunately, we took a good hit in the back.
Player safety obviously is a big issue with respect. And the one thing, and I don't think we ever focus on it enough with the officials who are on the field, the professionals, the full-timers, well, I shouldn't even say full-timer because they're not, but you understand what I'm saying, the regular officials, that's a big part of what they do, and we overlook it too often.
It's a very big part. And actually, I asked the referee a number of times, I don't know if you saw me talking to him, but the number of times I called him over was about player safety. I just felt like some of the hits that were on Blaine, are we're right around that you know, possibility of late hits. And I just wanted to make sure that they understand that that's it's different from another foul, that if it's gray, don't throw the flag. But if it had something to do with player safety, then right. If you want to really address the situation and make sure players are being looked after, especially the quarterback position, that we gotta.
And there was another hit to the face on Gabbert I saw from 97 Griffin, the defensive end. So
right,
yeah, we caught a couple of those. And again, it's
I know they're trying their best.
You can't do anything about it.
No,
but player safety is one thing they're going to have to do better.
Well, I just think I think that's important, especially at that quarterback position.
Okay, I've got a tweet from a gentleman who disagrees. He didn't think Guy Wimper played all that well yesterday.
Well,
and maybe he didn't see what you saw.
Yeah. Well, Guy had a tough duty over there. I mean, Roberson is a
fast.
Jared Allen gets all the credit for what he's done. Roberson had 8 sacks last year, and he looks like a force this year. We didn't help Guy in a couple of times. We chipped. We actually chipped so good. We knocked the guy across Guy's face and basically gave him a free run at Blaine. So it looked not good on Guy's part, but we can do a better job with meshing up with our backs, and, you know, it's almost like a double team.
Sure.
But you know, again, we were in a tough environment,
yep.
And when you can't hear, those tackles are on an island out there.
Well, let's jump over to Eugene Monroe. He's getting some accolades today for the way that he played against Jared Allen. Remember, Allen, last year, folks, 22 sacks, which is a half shy of the NFL record. Just a wrecking machine, 4-time All-Pro, multiple Pro Bowler, and a guy who has an impact in almost every way, in almost every game. But yesterday, his impact was severely limited. How well did Eugene play, Coach?
Eugene played extremely well. I think he ended up with I think he had an assist, one half of a tackle. So that was good. That was great. I mean, I think that was good for Eugene, his confidence. I mean, we're going to face a lot of guys that are coming off that edge over there that are great pass rushers. But yesterday was probably, if not the best, in the top three. And to do what he did, he came out there and quietly did his job. You didn't hear a lot about him, but you certainly didn't hear a lot about Jared Allen either, like you can.
And on a day in which the offensive line was really struggling and needed him to play that well, because if he wasn't, it would have been Katie bar the door, he stepped up. I like the fact that on a day where they really needed him and really needed him with injuries, he was at his very best.
I agree. Totally. Totally agree with you.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. And a lot of folks, Coach, from an emotional standpoint, not throwing questions out there other than to say that they were impressed with the offense and the way that it made itself – that's the wrong term – that it went down the field at the end of the ball game, you know, with no timeouts. And you just touched on Blaine, career high in passes, completions, 2 touchdowns, stood in the pocket again. That's been a criticism of his, and made the big throws. And at times, the Vikings brought everybody, didn't they?
They did, and I thought, you know, I was very pleased with Blaine. Again, he's taken steps forward in his progress. That 2-minute drill with no timeouts, those are things we work on in practice. And, you know, offense coordinator Bob Brackowski said to him this morning, remember the first time we ever installed our 2-minute package, we went out on the field and it looked just like it did yesterday. So those are things that we've been good at in practice, and when we've had a couple chances in games, we've done pretty well with them. And then yesterday in that environment with no timeouts to hit that first play to Cecil Shorts, which is was a great throw by Blaine, great route by Cecil, and really the protection allowed that all to take place. That started it, and we just hit a couple plays, and then the best thing he did with Cecil on the touchdown was he looked off the coverage in the pocket with a rush that was coming like maniacs at him. He looked off the coverage to try to get a one-on-one with Cecil, and he did, and Cecil gave Cecil a chance to make a play. That's all we're asking him to do.
You know, on a day in which it appeared that the Vikings were doing everything they could to take Justin Blackmon away, he was looking off a lot. I mean, and he went to LaRon, he went to Cecil, he went to Mercedes. How big was it to get Mercedes involved in the end zone, in the red zone like you did?
That was good. That was good for Mercedes. Like I said, he's a big target down there. Play was well executed. We had a couple of them. Actually, Guy Wimper was in there, was open. He was one of the eligible receivers. I'm glad he threw it to Mercedes.
Yeah, me too.
But, it, you know, we got Mercedes involved early with a big crossing route on the third down. A screen that we got a lot of yards back after losing some. Mercedes played well in the run game as well. I was very pleased with the way he played as well.
All right, folks, we need a break. We'll take it now. More to come with the Jaguars head coach, Mike Mularkey. Jaguars fall in Minnesota, getting ready now to take on the Houston Texans in the home opener here at Everbank Field this Sunday. And as you make your way to the stadium, stop by Gate. Nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate this week. More to come after this on Jaguars Radio. And welcome back to the Mike Mularkey Show. Folks, when you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. There are six locations here in Jacksonville, and they offer more fashion and less price. You can join us, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. And you can also join us in the regular season at Jags Voice. And we've got some more Twitter questions here. And Coach Austin wants to know what happened in the last 20 seconds where the defense broke down. They played so well to get you the ball back in that last 2 minutes. Where were the breakdowns?
Well, first of all, we'd like to, if we could, start over with the kickoff and see if we could send it in the end zone. We just felt like if we could get a touchback, we'd much rather have them have 20 seconds on their own 20 than 14 seconds on their 31. We didn't think, even if they completed the passes that they did from the 31, time would have run out from the 20. So, you know, and it's been addressed. I think Josh was, almost like a golfer trying to swing too hard to get it in there. Didn't hit it well.
Right.
It went a line drive right to their up back. So they got the ball out to the 31, which right there is a negative for us because now they don't have as far to go, obviously. But and then I'm going to give Minnesota credit because they hit a hole in a zone. They blocked up our the protection with seven guys. They knew they had to throw the ball deep. So they had a nice protection. And then what we did on the touchdown to Cecil Shorts, Ponder did the same thing. He kind of looked off our coverage, our interior coverage, and there was a hole, a void in the hole, and hit it. And I give him credit for it.
Right. Got a question here about Tyson Alualu and what you thought of his play coming back from the knee injury, the knee surgery back in the offseason.
It was good to have him back in there. He's really disruptive in there. It takes more than one guy to handle him. He's got his effort just to, if he is blocked, he's still relentless to end up on tackles late. And then his ability to go out to defensive end. Again, we're shorthanded up front with our D-line.
You started
him
out at end yesterday, didn't you?
No, we started – no, we had Branch and Mincy outside.
Okay.
But he did rotate out there. You know, he had about seven snaps outside his end. And that's good. We got a guy that can play both interior and outside and be effective.
355-NFL-1-800-355-6351. How about Maurice Jones-Drew? Obviously, he got a lot more carries than most people thought he would. Was that beyond what your plan was for him anyway?
I'd say it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm glad it worked out like it did. It's obvious that he was well prepared. I thought Sly Kroom did a good job getting him ready to go with the game plan. He did a lot of things in that game that he had to know a lot for being there a week.
Right.
And I thought he ran the ball extremely hard. You know, he was physical. I just think, he still needs to get in a little bit of football, just the hitting part of it and the seeing where the holes are going to be. There's things I think he's going to get better and better now, more time he's has on task.
Yeah, just straight line running sprints isn't going to get you ready for carrying a guy on your back, is it?
No. Well, plus for some of the runs in our run scheme, a little bit different. Some of the things are different. He'd like to just get a feel, where is it going to be? Where is that hole going to be? Where is the receiver maybe coming in to crack a guy?
So it looked like he was close a couple of times to getting free.
Very close. Very close to
Which
breaking.
That's a good sign.
That's a good sign, yeah. I was very pleased with him.
You're waiting on the MRI, obviously, on Rashad Jennings. If he's not able to go this week, does that move Montel Owens into a backup role, or is Parmalee a guy who you can give the ball to?
Really, both of them. You know, Montel, he was coming off of a week with a knee as well.
Right.
And we've got some – seems like every position I talk about, I'm talking about
injuries first.
Injuries, which is tough this time of the year. But, Montel had 24 snaps of special teams. You can see why he's in the Pro Bowl. He is a force. But he can play running back. He could be the backup. But we would then be limited with him in special teams as
right.
well. So,
you had him and Maurice in the backfield at times yesterday. When you've got a guy like Montel that can do so many things, he catches the ball well, he blocks. You really have a lot of versatility, don't you?
You sure do. He's just a good football player.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
who doesn't need more of those?
Yeah, that's there's a good football player, good person. I can't say enough about the guy.
800-355-NFL-1-355-6351. We have reached the bottom of the hour, and let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our discussion. More on the Vikings, and we'll start looking at the Houston Texans, who beat the Miami Dolphins yesterday. They are the home opener opponent on Sunday here at Everbank Field. More to come after this on the Jaguars Radio Network. And welcome back to the Mike Mularkey Show. Well, you can visit Sonny's today and try their new barbecue baskets, the slow-smoked pulled and sliced meats basket for $7.99. Or for just a little more, choose between two other mouth-watering baskets. Sonny's is the first name in barbecue. Jaguars kick off against the Houston Texans 1 o'clock here at Everbank Field on Sunday. For those of you listening in Jacksonville, we'll start with the Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show at 10 a.m. Jaguars pregame for the rest of you on the network at noon, and then kickoff at 1 o'clock. Before we move on and start looking at the Houston Texans, Coach, a couple more thoughts on the defense. Jamie wants to know your thoughts on Rasheen Mathis, how he played, how close he is to being 100%, and do you think Derek Cox is a guy that you are getting closer to having back on the field?
Yeah, I think Derek is going to get some work here for the first time in a number of weeks here. We're going to try to work him in limited on Wednesday and then hopefully gradually increase the reps as we get to Friday. But we'd like to think that, but we're optimistic about it. And then Rasheen, again, the more reps he's getting game-wise and the more confidence that he's gaining in that knee, you know, I just think the better he's going to be. But I think it's just going to need some time.
How about up front? Pressure from Branch? Did you see it?
Yeah, you know, we didn't get the pressure that we wanted.
Right.
But again, you know, you got to watch. That offense is very similar to ours, and so I know the protection scheme. I know a lot of the routes. Just, you know, watch the filming on them, and then even being in the game, there's a lot of design to get the ball out of his hands
quickly,
and to get the ball out of the pocket to throw it. And then most of the time when they did throw anything deep, they had a protection that allowed, just like that last throw,
right,
you know, on the 20 seconds, they had seven guys to protect to get the ball out of his hands. The times they didn't do that and they tried to throw the ball, we sacked them. So
okay,
they knew, and you know, the one time they didn't do it, we got a sack.
Yeah, seven-man protection, it's hard to get there even if you blitz.
It's hard to get there, yeah, it's hard to get there. And
sure,
they know that,
line.
And it buys some time, and especially when you're only bringing four. That puts a little stress on the coverage.
Right. When you get some of these guys back, when you get Derek Cox back on the field, when you have Darryl Smith back on the field, that gives you so much more versatility to go crazy and do some of the things that the Vikings did in terms of pass rush, right?
Yes. I mean, there's obviously you get the starters back. There's much more in the scheme. Right now, we're with the guys that we have in there, both offensively and defensively, we're trying to scheme around what they can do best with their abilities. And, you know, sometimes it's not a you know, exotic package that you're going to put in there.
Right.
You don't want to put these guys in position to fail. And so we're you know, we're moving parts to make sure those guys are in a place that they're comfortable and confident in what they're doing.
And when you come into a week like this now where you've got to watch the injury report, getting ready for the Houston Texans, you're almost starting over in a bit, trying to figure out where those guys fit now, don't you?
It's a little bit like that, yes. Tomorrow's big game planning day, and really we're not sure where some of these guys are. They're going to be by the end of the week and by the game time. So we got to, you know, some of it's a little iffy.
That's a really difficult assignment.
It's tough. You know, but we have a smart group back there with Mel and Bob Rutkowski and John Bonamigo with the coordinators. They'll put us in a good position when game time comes around.
Philosophically speaking, do you build a plan and then whittle it down for what those guys can handle, or do you build two different plans? One if you've got your guys and one if you don't?
No, you got a master plan that you can cut back on if you don't have your personnel in there.
All those guys. And when you look at the Houston Texans coming in, Matt Schaub appears to be healthy based on the other day.
Right.
They just gave him a brand new contract over there. Andre Johnson had a really big game, over 100 yards and a touchdown. I mean, that is an offense that wants to do what you do, run with power with Arian Foster and Ben Tate and throw the ball and stretch the field.
Very similar. I mean, they got a really physical offensive line. They like to run the football. They like to establish the run and really use the clock like we do. And then they have a very, very extensive play-action game off of the run game. And everything looks alike, so you really got to be on your toes and have your keys. And there will be keys to know the difference. And then, obviously, the weapons that they have to go with everything that they have offensively. They're a difficult offense to defend.
I would guess it starts with stopping Arian Foster first and foremost.
Well, I think that's the number one thing any week. You got to stop the run game. If you establish the run, you can do basically what we did in that first drive. You can chew up the clock. You can wear down defenses. You can wear down the fronts. And, you know, that's what you want to do. Now you got to get in the passing game and you pin your ears back and rush the passer if you feel like you can't run the ball.
You know, these guys did a pretty good job. Mel did last year against him. I think he had 65 yards in one game and 80 yards in the other. And it scored a touchdown in both. So they were able to corral him. But the thing about him, he reminds me, and maybe it's the offense he plays in, Coach, but he reminds me of Terrell Davis. He's got that one cut and go.
Right.
And it's like he's running downhill.
That's basically how that offense is designed. It's to stretch the defense, look for a crease, look for somebody that's not in their gap. And he's very good about just – he's a patient runner, but as soon as he sees that crease, it's 1 foot, and it is straight line downhill, and it's fast. And he's a big back. So you definitely got to tackle.
I was going to say, you're going to get a shot at him, but you better make it count.
You got to tackle him. You got to have wrap. You know, use your arms to wrap around him, and you got to have more than one. We got to rally around him to stop him.
You know, one of the things that Jeff Lagerman has always said about him is that he is equal threat, running and receiving. He is a tremendous receiver out of the backfield. In fact, I think last year he had two games in which he had at least 100 yards receiving. Also, you're talking about a 6'1", 220-pound guy that's coming out of the backfield, catching the ball that well. I mean, you just got to know your keys.
You got to know where he's at, and you got to have somebody always around him. I mean, that's going to be important.
And if Darryl Smith is not ready to go, it means Kyle Bosworth and Russell Allen on the outside really have to know their stuff.
They will. They played well. I mean, I was very proud of Kyle Bosworth. You know, he's been thrown into a role. Fortunately, he's gotten some games because of Darryl's injury. He's had some chances to play at length, so he's getting more comfortable at it, and he'll have a big test this week.
You know, you're kind of hoping. It's kind of like buying stock at a cheap price. You know, you buy a lot of it, and all of a sudden it shoots up, and all of a sudden, you know, you've got a nice portfolio going. You're hoping that these guys, and they get their time playing with the injuries, you get the injured guys back, all of a sudden you have a wealth of depth, right? I mean, that's
well,
what you're hoping for.
The experience that they're having right now will pay off for us at some point.
If we
have to go back, you know, it's not like brand new, and they've had it against some good offenses.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. This is the Mike Mularkey Show. You can join us on Twitter as well, at Jags Voice. And as you can tell, we'll move those thoughts along to the coach. We're back with more after this on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to the Mike Mularkey Show. We'll go till straight up 7 o'clock in the Eastern time zone, obviously 6 o'clock for those of you out west. And, Coach, some thoughts on Dwight Lowry and the way that he played. Folks impressed with the way that he has played at free safety and wonder if his role might expand and maybe he's a nickelback if you don't have Derek.
Wouldn't have a problem putting him in there. That's how well he has played. He's one of those guys that hasn't been talked about a lot either, just because he hasn't been so solid. Yeah, he's been so solid. Both of our safeties, Dwan Landry and Dwight Lowry, I'm very happy with the two we got back there. I think we're pretty well set back there.
Boy, they're going to have to be sharp this week, right? Owen Daniels is a guy. He's like Dallas Clark always has been in this division when he was with the Colts. Elusive, sneaky. You know, that's the best way to describe him. And as a tight end, I'm sure you can appreciate that.
Yeah, he's and they use him so well. They find ways to get him the ball with the screens and the bootlegs where he comes from the behind the line of scrimmage. There's just multiple ways that he finds ways to get open, and I use the word crafty.
Okay.
How to get open, and our safeties are going to have their hands full there too.
You know, it always seems like on third down he's the guy that the Texans go to.
That's just a trust that you know, Matt Schaub has. He's got a trust level that he's going to get open. He's got a very good feel for voids, how to get open in the zones, and then man coverage, he's tough to cover one-on-one.
Speaking of tough to cover, when you talk about the best receivers in the games, Andre Johnson's name almost always comes up. He's been down in Houston, and they just made the playoffs for the first time last year in what is ninth season. But he is a guy that is extremely difficult to cover and different from a lot of others, Coach. I think it's because he's so strong. Am I right on that?
No, he is. He's very – well, obviously the size, but strong, physical, fast. I mean, I can name – all the above, all he can do is he can all the routes. He's a deep threat. He's not afraid to take the ball over the middle because of his size.
Oh, yeah.
And covering him one-on-one is a difficult task. And so And you got to just make sure you know where he's at all times, because they do a good job with him, moving him to get him in positions.
Do you marvel at the size of the receivers? I mean, the receivers of today are almost as big as the tight ends of your era.
They are. They are.
Or maybe bigger in some cases when you look at a Brandon Marshall up in Chicago, 6 foot six.
Yeah. We had Julio Jones last year. Oh. You know, he's having a starting out with a big year. He's a big, big receiver, big
strapping
physical,
guy.
I mean, muscular, fast player. So, yeah, they're tough to cover.
There's an evolution to NFL players these days, and some of these positions that were always a little more on the slender side aren't anymore.
No, it's there is a trend there, and
yeah.
They're getting bigger and faster every year.
And bigger physical receivers in the red zone, too.
Yes.
That's where Julio Jones really is tough.
Yeah, he's a great target down there. Again, just try to get the ball in his area, and he's pretty good about coming down with it. Like Johnson.
You bet. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Let's take a break. More to come. A couple more segments with the head coach of the Jaguars, getting you ready for the Houston Texans in the home opener on Sunday here on the Jaguars Radio Network. Welcome back to the Mike Mularkey Show. Brian Sexton along with the head coach of the Jaguars. And we'll take your calls, your questions, your comments. Also, Twitter. Coach, let's talk a little bit about the defense. It changed fundamentally last year when Wade Phillips came on and brought the 3-4. Your thoughts on what you've seen on tape of that particular group? They've got some talent now.
They do.
Some
They're
real talent.
Very stout up front. Very stout. And they've got the guys to play the scheme up front. Their D-line is a very physical bunch. They play techniques very good. They're basically two-gap, and they're trying to create a wall, not allow you to get any push up front, and then letting the two interior backers, you know, with Cushing to be able to flow, and then the two outside linebackers, your prototypical 3-4 linebackers, they're trying to basically box your offense in and not let you have any outside runs. I mean, it's really well designed. They got the players to do it, and then when they go into passing situations and they want to get those outside linebackers as rush defensive ends, they're very good pass rushers.
You hate to lose the number one overall pick from a draft like Mario Williams, but they've got two guys in Brooks Reed and Connor Barwin that I think combined for 16 or 17 sacks last year. What have you seen from them?
Well, we played them last year, so I'm well aware. Again, very very good front, but those two guys are they wreak havoc if you let them. You've got to help the tackles. Again, being at home here, it'll be a little bit of our advantage being able to hear. Eugene Monroe coming off a big game this week. You know, he's going to have his hands full this week as well. But we've got to handle those two outside guys.
Speaking of Eugene, does a game like that where you take on the league's best pass rusher and you stone him, does a game like that carry you as a player from week to week momentum?
It's got to give you confidence that you can.
So.
Yeah, I most certainly think it's going to help us, help him move forward. But he's just blocked the best.
How about his coaches? I mean, when you look and see, a guy that plays that well against that, do you think, all right, we don't need to help as much, we can do some other things? Does that give you confidence?
It gives us confidence, but we're also going to be smart. That sends a message offensively what we're going to do, that we're not going to let you change the game, even though we're confident.
You gotta do what you do.
Even though we're confident in Eugene Monroe, we may have somebody come from outside in and ear hole you to let you know we're not going to let you be a factor in this game, no matter how we have to do it.
Grab a call, Coach, 355-NFL-1. We've got Jay in Ponte Vedra with a thought on Maurice Jones-Drew. Jay, welcome to the Mike Mularkey Show.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate having the time here to talk to Coach, and what a great game this past weekend. My question, and I can take it off the air, is the utilization of Maurice Jones-Drew as a punt returner and the thoughts there, and what was the thought on putting him in at that time?
Well, actually, Jay, I appreciate the phone call. The thought there was, Maurice came to me and he said, Coach, I like to return punts. I've done it before.
All Pac-10 punt returners.
Yeah, I mean,
with Reggie Bush in the conference,
yeah,
too.
So I know, of his history of it, and I just thought, I'm trying to get him into this game in certain packages, and that's something that doesn't take a lot of thought to it. You just got to go back there, and I saw him catch some punts this week in practice, and I just told John Bonamigo, let's get him back there, because I know if I'm on the opposing sideline, I see, Maurice Jones-Drew catching a punt in space, I'd have a little bit of fear in me if I saw him standing back there.
I wonder when the last time the league's leading rusher was returning punts on opening day the next season.
I couldn't answer that
question. Probably hasn't.
I wish you'd had, another chance. The first one, I wish you'd have called – for a fair catch.
I thought you might say that. Yeah.
But we did give him another opportunity. We didn't. We need to do a better job with the team's gunners. They were better than we were yesterday, and that's what we got to improve on. But I think you know, it was nice to see Maurice back there. I just, you know, for a guy to come in here and volunteer to go back there and do that, it just shows you how much of a team player he is.
And that just, you got so many questions. How's he going to be? Is he going to be angry? Is he going to be a problem? No.
No, he has not been. No, we welcomed him back. I was the first one there to welcome him back.
Right.
Look, it was a situation. That's over. We're moving forward.
But he comes in and wants to return punts. I mean, that sends a signal to everybody from the outside, right?
Yes. Yeah. No, big team player.
All right. Let's take our final break. We'll come back and wrap things up with the head coach of the Jaguars here on the Mike Mularkey Show on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to the Mike Mularkey Show. We'll wrap things up over the next few minutes and remind you the Jaguars take on the Texans. It's the home opener here Sunday. Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue tailgate show, 10 a.m. For those of you in Jacksonville, the network pregame begins at noon, kickoff at 1 o'clock. And, Coach, you got to be glad to get home. I mean, I will say this, though. It was really nice on Sunday morning to feel the cool air in Minneapolis, but I think this Sunday you're going to be glad to have the heat and humidity.
I think everybody's glad to be home and excited to play at home in front of our fans and show themselves off. I'm sure our guys are got a little chip on their shoulder and glad to be home in front of the home fans.
You know, I've got a sense from having spoken with a lot of the guys on the plane ride home last night that this is going to be a very short week for them. They are going to be so focused on getting back on the field. You know, it's just not going to seem like all that long.
No, we'll be right back on it before they know it. Wednesday, it's supposed to be cooler this week, you know, in the mid-80s. I'm not sure about Sunday at 1 o'clock. We haven't played at 1 o'clock outside in the heat and humidity, although we've been practicing it, and I'm hoping that comes to our advantage. But we may even have to lighten the load a little bit because of the number of injuries, offensive line and defensive line. So we're going to have to look at our practice schedule as well. Just make sure we're doing it smart so when it comes to Sunday, we're ready to go.
Because you were going hard and heavy last week too, weren't you?
We were.
That's what football's all about.
Yeah, and it shows up to me. It shows, you know, we have been very physical. We have played very high effort. Guys have been flying around. It has given us chances to win these games. We've seen it in the preseason. We saw it yesterday. We had a chance yesterday with, like I said, we plugged a lot of different pieces into our offense and defense and even special teams. And, you know, we didn't play our best game, and we had a chance to win. And that's all we want every week when that clock ticks down, that we have a chance to be in that game to win it. And we, you know, the other thing is we got to learn to win those tight games, and that's going to be a process.
The process starts with winning one, right, though?
The process is winning it. I mean, win it on the road, win it at home. I mean, there's just, you know, win two in a row, don't lose one, don't lose another game after a loss. There's a lot of things we're just trying to teach these guys to be a consistent winning team. There's a lot of things we got to learn how to do.
It was only the preseason, but I mean, you won a couple of games in the preseason at the end. You know, the Giants game, the Saints game.
Right.
And we noticed that trend. Yeah, I mean, that was our conversation when Cecil Shorts came down with the ball in the end zone. That's the personality of this team, obviously.
Well, it's a no-flinch mentality. We have a chance. We have a chance every week. And our guys know that we got to play 60 minutes, and we got to play it together, and we got to stick together each week. And I think they will.
Coach, thanks for your time tonight.
Okay, Brian.
Best of luck getting everybody healthy and back on the field this week.
Thank you.
All right, Jaguars and Texans coming up next Sunday afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Mike Mularkey Show. We'll talk to you next Monday night at 6:00.